Howard, and I think they'll still deserve it. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, President. My name is Uli Fias from the Secretary of the see the committee on land and mineral resources. I'm also from Northwest Province. I'm representing the province. Can we allow members to introduce us?
Good morning. My name is Omi Singh. I'm a member of this committee from the province of KwaZulu-Natal. We're the starting at the moment.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ellen Prin. I'm a member of this committee representing the Western
Cape. Good morning. My name is Fayez Smith. I'm representing Mpopo.
Good morning. My name is Masangosi Nambo from Gauteng, a member of the committee.
Morning, everybody. Kulvis Yuster, researcher for the committee.
Good morning, everyone. Ask about with the secretary. Thank you.
Good morning, Iwan Lemeka Val, a big committee assistant.
Good morning, my name is Crystal from Sydney.
Good morning, Iwan. I'm with the people from the South African Institute of International Affairs. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Abulida Mambo, and I'm from the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Sue Middleton, and I'm from the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Dylan Toba. I'm also from the Department of Agriculture, and Fisheries.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members. My name is Craig Smith. I'm from the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries.
Thank you. I've got the following apologies. Honorable Labas Gafne, some member, and the Honorable Masango, and the apologies also from the Minister. Deputy Minister and the DG. There might be a possibility that one of them will be coming to join us. We'll however allow the department to give us a presentation with these apologies that we're having. Can I hand over to the department?
Thank you, Chairperson, and the honorable members of this committee. Chairperson, maybe before we do the presentation, allow us also to extend an apology from the acting Deputy Director General of Fisheries Management, Ms. Sipogazi Ndudane. She's out of the country. I'm currently acting in the post for the for this week. And with that, Chair, we also would like to request to you that Mr. Craig Smith, who is heading the Office of Small Scale Fisheries, be allowed to do a presentation on health of the office. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair. I'll just briefly take you through the presentation on the implementation of the Small Scale Fisheries Policy. It's been a very complex policy and a very complicated implementation process for this particular policy. But I'll try my best just to give you some of the background and take you through some of the processes that we have followed in the department, and also just to give you some insights to some of our challenges. So in terms of the presentation outline, I'll briefly talk to the background of the Small Scale Fisheries Policy, just in terms of where it has its roots. Then, in terms of the objectives of the Small Scale Fisheries Policy, as well as the principles of the Small Scale Fisheries Policy, And then I'll focus some time in terms of the implementation status to give you an update in terms of where we are in this process. And then to touch on some of the key activities that we have planned for 2015, this current financial year. And then to lastly, just to inform you some of the key implementation challenges that we face as the department. In terms of the background, the men, women, and children have been living in coastal areas for thousands of years, harvesting marine resources for consumption, livelihoods, medicinal purposes, and as part of cultural and social practices. In the past, these traditional fishers were mostly excluded from commercial long-term fishing rights allocations. The Marine Living Resources Act did not recognize traditional small-scale fishers. And these fishing communities are typically characterized by high levels of poverty and food security challenges. It was in 2007 an Equality Court order compelled government to redress the inequality suffered by these small-scale fishers. There has been extensive consultation on the small-scale fisheries policy, which led to its adoption in 2012. We look to the objective of the small-scale fisheries policy. These are some of the objectives. It's to create a sustainable, equitable, small-scale fishing sector, to secure the well-being and livelihoods of small-scale fishing communities, to maintain the health of marine ecosystems, to uplift fishing communities by providing appropriate support mechanisms, education and training, infrastructure and participatory management practices. Also, the split of co-management between government together with communities to manage or to co-manage nearshore marine living resources. It also takes fundamental human rights into account, Marine Living Resource Act principles, and international obligations. And lastly, it also promotes the interests of women, disabled, and child-headed households. Some of the principles in terms of achieving these objectives, firstly, we're looking at a community-based approach to rights allocation. It's a non-competitive process, it's a community-based legal entity, and it's very different to the previous processes that the department has adopted in terms of commercial rights allocation. It also adopts a co-management approach to the management of the small scale fishing sector, as alluded to earlier. It's government working together with the fishing communities to co-manage resources. The policy also deviates from our normal way of conducting this in terms of a multi-species approach in allocating fishing rights to small scale fishing communities, as opposed to a single by single species approach which is done in the commercial sector. We're also looking at the preferential access to small scale fishing communities. We are traditionally dependent on marine living resources for livelihoods. Very importantly, we're also ensuring the integrity of marine ecosystems and sustainability of the resources to ensure that they're not compromised, because this is what the small scale fishing sector, that their livelihoods will be dependent on these resources. And then also to consider a developmental approach to the small scale fishing sector. So it is in terms of developing the sector, economic developments, and as well as social factors. Moving on to the implementation status, the policy, as I said, was adopted in 2012. The following year, the small scale fisheries policy implementation plan was developed and adopted. That was 2013. Then the Marine Living Resources Act, which is the Amendment Act, was signed into law by the President in May 2014. Because, as I said earlier, the current Marine Living Resources Act had not accommodated small scale fishers, so the Act had to be amended to accommodate the sector. So that has been done in 2014. Then following that, there was the Department of Agriculture Policy and Fisheries Development Plan, which can be considered an internal operational plan, was approved in November 2014. And this rollout plan was also based on the Small Scale Fisheries Implementation Plan, and also made revision for a five-year implementation process. As I said right at the start of the presentation, the implementation process is a very complex one, and therefore the timeframes are commensurate in terms of the complexity of this policy. Just to take you through some of the phases of the implementation process, there's five broad phases of the 5 years. The first phase is a preparatory phase. The second phase is a development of support plans necessary to take small-scale fisheries forward. The third phase is the mobilization of fishers into cooperatives. And the fourth phase is the actual allocation of fishing rights to those cooperatives. And the fifth phase, which is the longest phase, is dealing with the post-allocation, but very important is dealing with how government provides or facilitates support and management of those conferences and the sector in general. So the original time frames in terms of our operational plan was to allocate these small-scale fishing rights in March 2016. So I just need to point that that was the initial time frame. And I'll touch on this again as we move further in presentation to say that we have experienced a few delays. So that time frame would have to be readjusted. Then also to indicate that the adopted rollout plan was explained and disseminated to all our stakeholders, just to inform in terms of the process that the department will be following with the implementation of this policy. Then continuing with implementation steps, looking at what has been done, the preparatory phase, which includes the development of the rollout plan, the promulgation of the small-scale fishing regulations and the Amendments Act, the establishment of the small-scale fishing steering committee and forums, and the appointment of service providers, these have largely been concluded. So most of the work started in last year, and the only remaining items under this phase that needs to be concluded is the final promulgation of the Amendments Act and the finalization of the regulations. Then significant work also commenced on various support plans, and this is now touching on the second phase of the implementation, such as developing the cooperative model, the small-scale fisheries cooperative constitution that governs how the cooperatives should function, then management principles for the Basque species, as well as communications plan, stakeholder engagement plan, and catch data monitoring plan. So there's significant work that has been already started on a number of these aspects, which provide a support function for implementation. The department has also launched an expression of interest for coastal communities on the 27th of February this year. This process is meant to allow coastal communities to register or to lodge the expression of interest with the department to indicate that they are interested in this process and that they would like to be part of this process when we as the department are ready to do the actual verification of fishes in the communities. So that process is still open. And as I said, it's launched on the 27th of February. Then the draft small-scale fishing regulations was published for public comment on the 6th of March 2015. The regulations essentially describes the process whereby the department will have to implement the small-scale fisheries policy, but it's not just describing the process of implementation, it also describes certain management aspects of the sector. As I said, the small-scale fishing sector is a new sector, and therefore specific regulations have to be adopted to manage this particular sector. That was 6th of March, publication of these regulations. We had a 30-day period for comments. The department also engaged on a national roadshow, should I say, for the four coastal provinces, engaged with something close to 3,000 stakeholders in 27 venues, and received a substantial number of comments. And those comments have now been all captured. The department is currently finalizing the responses to those comments and whether those comments will actually find a way to amend the actual draft regulations. So key activities moving forward, as I said, we need to review those comments on the regulations and to finalize those regulations. Once those are completed, we'll be able to promulgate the Marine Resources Amendment Act. That will also then allow us to conclude the expression of interest process and to develop a schedule of community visitations. I'd like to pause on this one. This expression of interest is also very important because this is the gateway by which the community can enter this process. So the department will also ensure that in terms of communication is very broad, using local media, to ensure that communities are aware of this process so they don't miss the boat with regard to this process. Because once they've lodged the expression of interest, we are obligated then to work with those communities to conduct the implementation process. Then following that, we need to finalize support plans, which I spoke to about earlier, and that includes the resource for fishing sectors, because this is a very controversial aspect. The department cannot make new fish, but we can only manage the resources that we have. And currently, what we need to happen is that a number of resources in the commercial sector would need to be considered for inclusion in the basket for the small-scale fishing sector. But those discussions are still needed, and they need to be concluded before we actually engage with the communities. And then to verify all fishers in communities that submitted an expression of interest, and then once we've done that, we'll be ready to actually mobilize those verified fisheries into small-scale fisheries carcasses. And in doing so, we'll assist those carcasses in terms of developing their constitution, their management plans, their registration with CIPC, as well as to assist them with applying for a small-scale fishing rights. We also need to engage with carcasses because carcasses will be very new to a number of our stakeholders. So we will need to engage with them in terms of governance training, also to get their input in terms of what they would require in terms of the basket of species, as well as in terms of their fishing area. So that is, those are some of the key activities that are planned for in terms of remainder of this current financial year. The last slide just is to give you some insight in terms of some of the challenges that we as a department are facing in terms of implementing this very complex policy. As I alluded to earlier, the time frame is required to implement this policy, as indicated by the initial rollout plan, needs to be adjusted. We had delays, and which I haven't spoken to you about. One of the major delays that we had faced was that the regulations, the common period in the regulations was extended at the request of a number of stakeholders that approached the department to say that they needed more time to consider the draft, to caucus with their constituents. And as a result, instead of a one-month period in terms of dealing with the regulations and working with the regulations, the department had to extend it for, it actually worked practically about 3 months. So that would have to be factored in terms of the rollout plan, and that's one of the reasons why we would have to adjust the time frames. Then also coming to the small-scale fisheries management capacity and budget are inadequate. What many people don't know, this national program is, in terms of the director that's driving this process, only has a staff capacity of 10 officials, which would drive this national program. And the budget is also something that proves to be an Achilles heel for this process. We also, given the constraints, noted the need for additional assistance. We've already appointed service providers for the Northern Cape, Western Cape, and Eastern Cape to assist the department in implementing this process in those coastal provinces. We do, however, have an issue with regard to KwaZulu-Natal. We, at this point in time, we don't as yet have a service provider for that particular province. We also have a conflict with Isimangaliso Wetland Park. This is a World Heritage Site in KwaZulu-Natal. It covers a coastal area of approximately 70 kilometers in KwaZulu-Natal. And on that stretch of coastline, there are a number of coastal communities. And we do need some high-level engagement with the CEO and with the organization just to see how the small-scale fisheries policy can be implemented for those coastal communities that reside in the Wetland Park. So that is the one burning issue that remains outstanding. We also have the implication for the commercial sectors, and I've touched on this earlier, because currently a lot of the resources are currently used by the commercial sector, and in order to make space for the small-scale fishing sector, some of those resources would have to be transferred to the specific sector, which obviously has its own problems for the commercial sector. Then we have this issue of the instant relief program. We did this temporary dispensation through the quality court order that the department provides an instant relief to coastal fishers to allow them to continue to fish while the department is busy finalizing the implementation process. But there are a number of significant deep-rooted problems in this particular dispensation that cannot be resolved in the dispensation, which actually requires a lot of hands-on work by the department, and it further reduces the department's capacity to implement the small-scale fisheries policy. Another big concern for the department is the establishment of marine protected areas. Not that marine protected areas in itself is necessarily a bad thing, but there are a number of marine protected areas that are proposed under Operation Bakisa, and if they are not done in terms of consultation with the necessary communities that is adjacent to those proposed areas, it could be a problem that you would limit the access to those communities. When I say we, it's actually this falls under Department of Environment Affairs and our jurisdiction, but it's just something that is raised as a concern by them. Another concern is in terms of the decentralization of fisheries management branch services. As most of you are aware, the fisheries is actually centered in Cape Town in terms of our offices. But if we are to take small-scale fisheries forward, in terms of even that the stakeholders that we're dealing with, we need to take the services to the people, which means that more budget, more staff, more infrastructure required in order that that can have offices in the four coastal provinces. Then lastly, obviously one of the big challenges is, as I said, the stakeholders that we're dealing with, the level of education, the level of understanding. So we will have to break through those barriers in terms of implementing this process. As I said, it's not an easy process, and we would have to take their hands in terms of walking them through this process. So that's the main challenge that we would have to deal with in terms of the implementation of this particular policy. I thank you for your attention, and I think I'll end my presentation there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, Honourable Prince, Honourable Singh, Honourable Thumbu, Honourable Kathy, that's a secret.
Honourable Prince. Thank you for the presentation. Listening to all the changes, my question on page 8-6 is, does the department have sufficient capacity to perform this function across all coastal provinces? Second question, can the department really explain how it plans to resolve the challenges of limited fishery resources between the conservation, commercial, and small scale interests? Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Prince. Let me also acknowledge the presence of Honorable Nambi, who is from Mpumalanga province. Okay. Honorable Singh.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, page 9. No service provider finds it unfortunate health, this is the department. The concern there that why isn't there one appointed? And if not, why can't there be a separate office in this very important coastal area? Because they also say in the next bullet, conflict with his Maliso Wetland Park. So I think warranting an office in KwaZulu-Natal at this stage is important. And to be looked into. And the other one question is on question page number 8, I think. Engaging in corporate and government training. Is there any kind of training and how in the province? The reason why I'm concentrating on causing the job because there's a lack of the department working in that community, in that province. And the corporate governance training in that province. And on page 7, my concern is that a management principle of basal species. What I'd like to know is that whilst we're managing that very well from the coastlines, what about the international fishing that's coming in as close and sucking up the species, or even into our waters in some instances? How is those controls in place? The last question is the time frame indicated to rise under the ROP was in March, but the presentation, the presenter said that they will have to relook at the date how long will we have to wait to get the finalization of that aid? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. My first question is about a request for a little bit of elaboration about the consultation so that we can have a sense of how that part was done. Then if you check the slide 3 of the presentation, you get an understanding that it's trying to address the limitations of the Marine Living Resources Act with regards to both traditional and small-scale fisheries. So I'm interested in a brief clarification of how many different user groups are catered for this policy. That's the second one. And the third one is linked to the first one. If the department is confident that the consultation process for the policy was sufficiently inclusive of all the user groups, especially the issue of the traditional leaders. Those are my big questions, Chair.
Thank you. Before handing over to the department for responding, let me check the consultation for the media use. Are you using different media so that the information can, at the end of the day, be received by the entire community, particularly the small scale?
Honorable Nyambi, you may be switch off. Over to the department.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the members for the questions. So we have two officials here that will be responding to some of the questions, but I just want to touch on the question of consultation. In the Chairperson, the consultations did take place in all the coastal provinces, and I would want to believe that all the relevant parties were present in most of these consultations that took place, from traditional leaders. I mean, I'm saying this because I was present. Okay, traditional leaders, local authorities, the communities, that is the fishing community themselves, and their representatives, the youth was present, and women were also present in most of these consultations. Attendance was very, very good, and I think we also have a record of all the deliberations and the kind of questions that people were asking. So, in our view, there was sufficient and broad consultation, and it is true, those consultation processes, that we had to revisit some of the assumptions that we made in on about the policy and how it should be formulated in order to respond to the needs of these coastal communities. Now, Honorable Nyambi was being specific in terms of whether all the user groups were present, including traditional authorities. I would say in provinces where we've got traditional leadership, especially in your Cape province, the Eastern Cape,
thank you. I don't know if there's anything that you want to add. Thank you, Didi. While you took the floor on consultation, maybe I could just add some other factors in terms of how we consulted with the communities. Before we published the draft regulations, we also held an inaugural small-scale fisheries forum meeting, which was a large meeting that pulled together people from the recreational sector, the commercial sectors,
all the organizations that represented coastal communities, and we took them through the proposed draft regulations before the draft regulations were actually published. This was done approximately about almost 2 weeks prior to the actual consultation within communities. The intention for that was that those organizations would go back to their constituents to brief them on the draft regulations so that they could be adequately briefed, so that the department engaged with the consultation process. They were able to then engage effectively with the department. So that was one aspect that in terms of consultation. We also, which wasn't entirely necessary, but it felt that in terms of MICLAC that was involved in the process of the policy adoption as well as the adoption of the implementation plan, we also presented the draft regulations to the MICLAC forum for various inputs. So that was all part of the consultation. Just to add that stakeholders also requested that the consultation period be extended. And there was then a significant amount of comments that were received in the second round of the comment period. The comment period is now closed. The department thus far hasn't received any contestation in terms of that if further time is needed or further consultation is needed. And I think the type of comments received actually covers a broad range of issues that the department is taking under purview right now. So we're quite confident that the consultation has been quite well and comprehensively enough and broadly enough to cover all the stakeholders, not just communities, but demanding that recreational and commercial will also be impacted stakeholders in the implementation of this process. If I may then move to off consultation to maybe addressing the issue of the first question in terms of capacity, do we have sufficient capacity to implement in the four coastal provinces? It's a difficult question because we don't know exactly how many fishers will be part of this process because we will have to do an identification exercise. Some of the figures that we're banding around at the moment is that we could have as many as 30,000 fishers being part of the process from the four coastal provinces. And if that is the case, it's going to be hard just with 10 staff to handle 30,000 fishers. So this is something that as we progress, we'll probably have much clearer picture in terms of how much capacity we will still be needing to work through this process. And I do take the issue in terms of decentralization something that we as a department would have to consider and take seriously, because commercial sector was fine in terms of how it was managed from Cape Town because it's a very much a business oriented environment. But when dealing with coastal communities, you need to have the services of department at hand. So that's something that we need to take very seriously. If I can then also just move to the second question, how do we plan to resolve the split of resources? This is a very, very contentious issue. As you're aware, that some of these resources are already allocated in the commercial sector as part of rights allocation, and they have, in terms of duration of the rights, or some of the rights currently expiring or about to expire, and so we're using this opportunity to see how these resources can be, some of these resources, particularly the nearshore resources, can be moved to the small scale sector. What we would have to do as a department, we would have to obviously caucus internally to come up with a departmental position in terms of what we think is a fair split on the resources. But then it's not just something that we as a department can afford without consulting the relevant stakeholders. So in this sense, we would have to consult with the commercial sector as well as with the small scale sector just to get their inputs in terms of what our thinking is in terms of the resource split. I'm not going to touch on the case initiative, then to do that. And then I think I'll maybe just in one issue there was there was a concern raised regarding international illegal fishing in South African waters. And if that is happening, obviously it's illegal. We have taken stringent measures as South Africa to bolster our compliance on sea, We're also very much implemented the port aid measures for foreign fishing vessels that are visiting our ports. There's a lot of concern that there's a substantial amount of foreign fishing that's happening in our waters. Unfortunately, a lot of these are just perceptions. They haven't been proof of this. Maybe also to share at this point, so Africa, I think, is the only country in Africa that has actually disallowed or prohibited foreign fishing waters inside its EEZ. It's 100 nautical miles. But also, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that Africa, in its English region, is the busiest port state in any of the coastal countries in this region. The next busiest port state would be Mauritius. So when I say port state, there's a lot of, we get up to about 1,000 foreign fishing port visits to our ports for taking on supplies and for taking on various bunkers, water, etc., and also offloading fish. This doesn't necessarily mean that they've been fishing in our waters because they would have to transverse through our EEZ in order to reach our ports. So I think there's a lot of misconception with regard to when these foreign fishing vessels are spotted in our waters, they're not necessarily fishing, but they're making use of our ports. And currently we have 3 ports that are available to foreign fishing vessels that are policed, that are monitored, and this includes Durban, Port Elizabeth, and Cape Town Harbour. Those are the only 3 ports that the foreign fishing vessels can come in to do their business. And then in terms of the issue of cooperative training, if I understand correctly, something that we would have to, in terms of the lack of capacity that's perceived in KZN, in fact that the department doesn't have a office in KZN in order to do the work in KZN. They have relied heavily on SNVL KZN Wara to do a number of the functions for that. But I'm touching on this as my colleague will say. But just to say that with the implementation of small scale, once those issues have been identified, it's only at that point that we roll out the training to those fishers. The reason for taking that decision is we didn't want to take a scattergun approach and commence with training now when we haven't yet identified who the fishers are, because that would just serve to create huge expectation that if people were recipients of training that they would be automatically considered for small scale. So in terms of being prudent in this, we are considering that we will first do the verification of the fishers. And once they have been approved as small-scale fishers by our minister, then we will move forward in terms of training those identified and verified fishers, as opposed to just training broad communities. So that is the approach that we're putting, and that's why right now that training hasn't yet happened, and it hasn't happened in any of the forecasts or promises. So that is a very important deliverable that will happen post-allocation. Once we've got these fishes verified, price allocated, and we've now identified who our small-scale stakeholders are. Because right now it's just very much coastal fishing communities that we do tighten up. So I hope that answers the question. Sorry, thank you, Sue. Just in terms of, there was a question in terms of the time frames, whether they had to be adjusted. The initial time frame was March 2016. The new time frame we're looking at right now with the delays is estimated to be July 2016, taking into account the delays in the regulations. So this is just something that we also would need to brief our minister on, that there needs to be approval or noting of this delay, and so that we can also communicate the amended time frames once again to all our stakeholders so that they also on the same page with regards to the implementation process.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members. I'm just going to touch on the issue of the service provider in KwaZulu-Natal. And if we could just take a step back. Unlike the other 3 coastal provinces, Northern Cape, Western Cape and Eastern Cape, where the fisheries branch has a presence and manages all fisheries-related activities itself in those provinces. In KZN, we historically had an agency agreement with SNVLO KZN Wildlife, where they are a parastatal, and they act as our implementing agent in KwaZulu-Natal. So as such, we don't have a presence in KwaZulu-Natal for the management of any fishing activities. And that has been the challenge around a service provider in KwaZulu-Natal. question as well. We hopefully we got, maybe this is too much information, but we are going to Durban on Friday, where we hope to resolve the issue finally around the service provider, where we will contract a unit directly to manage this small scale fisheries policy. So we won't have an agreement with Edenvale Brazilian Wildlife, we will contract the unit directly. So hopefully by the end of the week that challenge will be resolved. I think, as Craig has said, ultimately the first prize for the department, if we had the resources and the capacity, would be to have a presence, our own independent presence in all the coastal provinces, and we would work towards that. Then just in terms of Isimangaliso wetland and the challenges there, what we finding is that, as you will know, Isimangaliso is a World Heritage Site. It's also a marine protected area, and the park controlling board are presently issuing permits and fishing rights, if you like, exemptions in the park in terms of their own park regulations, and not in terms of the Marine Living Resources Act. And that is the conflict that we have at the moment, because according to us, fisheries is a national competency that we manage through the Marine Living Resources Act as the sole piece of legislation in terms of which rights and exemptions and permits can be allocated, and the park is using its own vitals. So it's an issue that we're going to have to deal with at a senior level and probably at an executive level as well.
On our inclusive responses, I just want to comment and maybe add to what Craig has said around the combating of illegal fishing activities. So one of the benefits of implementing the small-scale fisheries policy is that we are getting poor coastal communities involved as beneficiaries in the fishing sector. And in so doing, we will also be having partners in those communities who will be our eyes and ears in the protection of our marine resources. It will not just be a government's responsibility to protect marine resources, but we'll have a social partnership with those communities. So in a way, we'll not be alone in the protection of those resources, besides the other government interventions that we have in place to protect the resources in the whole in country. But communities for a long time have been excluded in the participation or in the mainstreaming or participation in the fisheries and service sector. So this time around, we'll be having them as our partners, so I thought let me just make that comment to us.
Thank you very much. Maybe a follow-up question. On page 3, bullet 1, look at that. Western Cape is one of the few provinces which has never been at home. The traditional leadership has been consulted in other provinces. Now I just want to check here in Western Cape, we have the king of the koi and the sa. Are they part of terms of the consultations? Do you maybe take them on board? That's one thing. Also a follow-up from one of the things.
This in regards to the service provider in KwaZulu-Natal, what I'd like to know from you answering. I know that Zimbabwe has been for many years the service provider agency that has been used in KwaZulu-Natal. And what I'd like to know is, has there been adequate and and is there a reason why you didn't enter it? Could you find a new service provider to service that area? And the are they loyal to their own, that they want to create a small country where they will have their own laws? And I think that the law should be across all the coast countries provided by the national. That's it.
Maybe also as the said committee on land and mineral resources, we must be mindful that one of our other departments is environmental affairs, where there is indeed a cordial relationship, which it will be easier if we bring them together on the same board and then discuss this matter of this manganese of the Western Bank. But I'm not actually responding to the question, but just make a reflection that largely this one of our department that we are with. Can I maybe hand over for a response?
Chairperson, I'm going to start with your question around the conservation with traditional leadership in the Ocean Cape, in particular the Khoi and the Swain traditional leadership. In the Ocean Cape, we did not specifically invite them, but there was broad consultation with all the communities of the Ocean Cape, particularly coastal communities. In this case, it was coastal communities. So your West Coast communities, up to the border with the Eastern Cape, they were all consulted. I mean, they were all part of the regulation. So we didn't extend necessarily an invite to the leadership of the Khoi and the Swain. Okay. Now, regarding the I'll ask you to respond to the Kirtan issue and the wildlife issue. But I just want to also thank the Chairperson for your comment regarding the need for an engagement with the Department of Environmental Affairs. Indeed, Chairperson, this is very, very critical, particularly in terms of their support, their mandate, and the need for the support, their support in terms of implementing the implementation of the small-scale fisheries policy. You see, there's a Pakistan project, which we all know. And through the Pakistan project, they are also encouraged to declare more MPAs. Now, you will have MPAs that will prevent fishing in certain areas, and the communities will recognize, because those could be the areas where they want to fish. And it becomes therefore critical that we sit down and we talk, and we have not gone to that point where we can agree on how we're going to take this process forward. So, Chairperson, thanks for that comment. I think we need to move in that direction.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of Singh's question on whether the service provided by Isimbelo Cape and Wildlife has been adequate, I think the short answer would be yes, but just to provide a little bit more background, currently in terms of the agency agreement that we have with Isimbelo Cape and Wildlife, they undertake three different functions for us. The first one is the compliance and enforcement, the inspections. The second one is catch data monitored in the small scale sector. And then the third one is resources research into the species in KZN. And we've had, they've been carrying out those functions, those three rural areas, for at least the last 15 years. And if we were to be frank with you, they subsidize. So we pay them for the work that they do from our own budget, but it's heavily subsidized. So for us, it's a very cost-effective way of dealing with fisheries management in KwaZulu-Natal. and we couldn't do it at the same cost that we have through the agency agreement. And we would want to continue that relationship into the foreseeable future. We don't have an issue with the work that they're doing and the quality of the service they're providing. I think in terms of Isimangaliso, what as my colleague said, we thank you for the tentative offer of raising this issue with environment. And I would say that we would reserve the right to call on you if we're unable to resolve the issue. But I think that just in terms of politeness, we need to raise it ourselves with the Environmental Affairs Department to Department. We need to set up a meeting with the board of Isimangaliso, and only then, if we can't reach an agreement, would we call in the headwinds to assist us. Just to, as you probably know as well, that fisheries used to be part of the environmental basket, so we do have that historical relationship with them as well. But as you said, we reserve the right to call on your support.
Thank you very much. Maybe a last word from the department before we go to a closure.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the members of the committee. First, we thought when we were called here that it's important that we share this very noble plan to mainstream participation in fishing, especially to benefit the coastal communities. And we're particularly excited because of your other responsibility in respect of your oversight of the work of Environmental Affairs and also the Department of Mineral Resources. You may be aware that we are all responsible for the implementation of the Pacha project. And we have to make it work. But within the Pacha project, as you said, various departments have got their respective obligations. I mean, for example, environment, minerals and energy. I think it is also expected to promote the health and owners position, growing the economy, the mining. Now, you're talking mining in the ocean. And at the same time, we need to ask ourselves what then happens to all my resources. So, and it's important that we say what we're planning to do to promote small-scale fishing at the southern ground, so that as we are confronted with environmental challenges around the protection of marine resources, as might be impacted upon by mining, gas exploration, we could call upon you as to assist us. And thanks very much for your guidance and also for your questions. There's a lot that we still have to do in terms, as you might have heard, about the challenges, but we are looking forward to a very bright future that will be developed and make a difference in the lives of the social community. And thanks very much, Chairperson, and the House for giving us this opportunity to take us through, to take you through this most serious policy that we have out there. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, all our members, the department, our media, supporting staff. It was very, very interesting information sharing. Hope in the future will be with it will be a full-fledged team. I'm not sure whether there's something to prepare there to eat. Okay, so food is going away. Please make sure that we enjoy that meal. We don't want to So the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.